मेरे परम पिता परमात्मा, मेरे परम पिता परमात्मा, सदाशिव निराकार, परम पिता परमात्मा, सदाशिव निराकार। ओ आनंद के सागर तेरी महिमा अपरंपार, महिमा अपरंपार, तेरी महिमा अपरंपार,
महिमा अपरंपार, तेरी महिमा अपरंपार।
You could take out this morning hours to come and listen. There are so many things to listen in the world, but to be able to listen to something which is going to empower yourself in the morning hours is very good. Because this is the time where you can grasp whatever you hear in the most accurate way. Because there is no clutter in the mind at this point. Because all through the day, something or the other comes into the picture and some memories. But this is the time that when you wake up in the morning, you feel refreshed already. And so the knowledge automatically goes and sits in the intellect. So you are the fortunate few who have taken up the opportunity of this time and you're listening. Yesterday you heard, all of you were here, you took the class and you heard about who you are. Who are you? Yeah? I'm sure you're not going to tell me your name. Yeah? You're a soul, you're a soul. Deepa Ben must have also mentioned to you about how there are these three components within the soul, the mind, the intellect and the sanskaras. And I start this session from that point, talking about sanskaras, that understanding that we are all souls. We are all just points of lights, originally very beautiful, with all the values that the world is searching for, is all hidden within. But at the same time, we see that there is so many differences among people, there's so much clashes and conflicts and so much that is happening that confuses an individual. So the question arises is that, how come we are so different when we are all souls, whatever religion, whatever it is? So, the understanding is that within the soul, there are different sanskaras. We look the same, spiritually, we're all brothers, but there are certain sanskaras which you have learned through the journey. And these sanskaras, some are very good, some are not good at all, which not only troubles others, but also the self. So, these sanskaras take over the mind and the intellect after a while, and there's a vicious cycle going on. So, the whole conference is on God's power. So, today would be the day where you would understand information, I have enough, I need power. We come to that point. So, because the moment I have power, I have control over my sanskaras, I can transform my sanskaras, and I can actually create a lot of difference in what is around me also. So, how do I get this power? First, let me understand how people try to bring this power, because I'll tell you, everywhere that we see, you know, every relationship in this world is give and take. Nowhere that you find that you say that I can keep giving and I don't need anything at all. The moment you start giving, there is always an expectation that there should be some sort of, if not you don't give me anything, but little bit of gratitude, a little bit of acknowledgement, or you know, something for what I give. So there is absolutely, they say the best relationship is a mother and child. Even a mother expects a lot, that she takes a lot of sorrow from, you know, whatever she gives. So there's a lot of give and take in the world. I would become powerful if there's someone who can continuously give and not take anything from me. A lot of love, respect. Continuously somebody gives me, then I can become very powerful. But then there aren't anybody around who can do that. Temporary again. They would finish themselves, they'd become empty. Or the giving would stop, but there has to be a give and take. So then we just look up to God, because we understand God is someone who can continuously give and not take anything from us, and He never becomes empty. Right? So that is how we understand. So everyone in this world asks God, that means to say He must be having a lot, and He never, never gets empty. But then if I ask anyone in this world, anybody for that matter, but 80 to 90% of the world would say, I believe in God. There's no question about that. Anything about God, people are just so much interested to listen, and they have a lot of deep love and respect for God. But then belief changes. You know, let us talk about faith, because belief is something that, you know, for example, I'll be sitting with you and I tell you, look, there is someone around here, you know, probably in, you go down the road and you go somewhere and there is a house and there is someone there who's a wonderful person and you should meet him and interact with him. You would probably say, yeah, thank you, sister. You would try to meet him, and you might even believe what I'm saying. But let us say you walk out of this room and you meet somebody there and he comes up to you and says, you know, did sister tell you about this individual in this house? And you say, yes. So he would say, don't believe the sister. He's not at all a nice person. Your mind would change, because you don't know that individual. But let us say you actually meet that individual, spend some time with that person. Anybody in this world would come and tell you anything, because you know you have faith. You would not get carried away by anybody. Until unless you do not know, you cannot have faith. If you read something, like let us say for example, I've never been to London, let us say. And somebody comes up to me and asks me, sister, can you talk about London? Can you give a lecture on London? I mean, we don't give lectures on London. But if somebody asks me and I say, okay, because I've never been there, so I refer to some books, I go and talk to people who've been to London, and then I give a speech. But I'm not an authority over that subject, because I've never been there. If somebody would ask me a question that we heard that the London Bridge is broken down, and I say, really, I don't know about that. If I've been there, I don't need to refer to a book, I don't need to ask anybody, because I know it. Knowing God is very, very important to develop faith. There's a lot of difference between belief and faith. Remember, back in Hyderabad, there was this girl who had come. And I asked her why she wants to meditate, you know, before she takes the course. Why do you want to meditate? And she tells me, I want to meditate because there is a boy in my project and I want to marry him. I said, for that you don't have to meditate for that. No, she said, he's already engaged. I said, if he's engaged, that's none of your business, then you move out of that project or forget him, no? She said, no, I saw the girl and she doesn't deserve him. But who are you to decide who deserves who, right? you're nobody for that. She said, no, I want to meditate so that I get the power to, you know, marry him or something. That luck comes to me. I said, this meditation won't help you in that. This meditation will help you forget him maybe. But not to go. So she was disappointed with this whole thing. So she left. She didn't come. She didn't come back for the course, which I understand. So then I think I don't know how many months later, I see her taking the course. And I see that she's taking the course with another sister. So I said, I remember you, I've seen you before. And she said, yeah, I'd come before. So I said, everything is okay. So she says, it's okay, but the thing is, I'm in trouble. Did you meddle with that boy's life? I asked her. She said, no, I did not. He's married and he's in Mumbai now. I said, good. So what is the problem? She said, I found one fakir, you know, some kind of fakir, who said, if you want, see, she couldn't get what she wanted from here, so she found somebody else. And that somebody else, he said, if you wear this thread and this opal stone, and if you do this, there is a Vashikaran mantra in this, something to attract the boy, and he will marry you. But for that, she said, every other day, 2-3 days later, and a puja is there. You know, I don't know what puja that man was doing, but for that puja, she had to pay 3,000, 4,000. So, in all those months, she paid 45,000 rupees. So she said, I lost all the money and the boy is married. I said, why would you even want to believe in such things? You're an educated girl, you're an engineer, you're working. Why do you think that this would help? This is belief. When you are in a very low state of mind, a lot of sorrow, there are a lot of methods then. You see these emails that come to you, if you don't forward this, see what will happen to you and all. And I get forward sometimes, and I message back and ask them, do you really believe this? Because I do not have a very strong faith in anything. I would tend to believe anything that comes my way, because, you know, probably it may be true, we don't know. You know, we might get into trouble, so let's just do it. So it's very important to know. When I was in school, when I was in the 10th grade, they took us to Goa for an excursion. It was a convent school. So there's a church called the St. Xavier's Church there in Goa. So the body of St. Xavier is still there. It's kept there. So every 10 years the body is taken out and you can go and touch the body and you're healed. That's what happens. So all the nuns who had taken us there, they made it to the queue. That was a day when the body is kept out and you can go and touch it. So they all went. And we were all sitting in the lawn. And they went. And when they went, there were two teachers who were not Christians who were interested. They were Telugu teachers, Telugu and Hindi. They said, we need to go and touch that because we have allergy and spondylitis and all that. So we will go and touch the sensei, we probably will get healed. So they also went. So when we came back to the school, we have the assembly and the nuns would come and share an experience. Right? There's a lot of giggling in my class. We'd stand in the assembly and they would giggle a lot. I would ask them, why are you giggling? What's going on? And they would say, isn't it funny, Radhika? Look, all the nuns are coming up on the stage and they're sharing about what a beautiful thing that has happened, and they got healed. And they're telling the truth. They got healed because they touched the St. Xavier's body. But look at the Telugu and the Hindi teachers there. They're just standing there. They won't even go and share anything because St. Xavier is very partial. He didn't heal them. So we'd all laugh, you know. But the thing is, St. Xavier's soul is not there. He's gone long back. His car is there. The driver is gone. What would the car do to you anyway? How much of you preserve? It's just there. But the nun believes. She believes deeply. Her power of belief heals her. That car does not heal her. But the Telugu and Hindi teacher, they are going inside and thinking how wonderful it would have been if Lord Krishna's image would be there inside. Right? So it is not something that they believe in. They're just throwing a stone and just seeing how it works out. They're really not into it. Most of them, if you see in Hyderabad, we have a temple. It's very famous. You might wonder, what is it famous for? If you go around that temple for 100 times, you would get visa to America. I'm not joking. It's true. Every youngster who's going to study his MS in US, he goes around the temple 100 times. Believe. People who go around and don't get it, don't talk about it. But those who go around it and get it, they talk about it. The beliefs are beliefs are beliefs. It's innumerable. And it keeps changing. Because today I go there, somebody comes up and says, look, if you go here, your daughter will get married. You go there. Oh, really? Yeah, I'll go there. So beliefs change. So surrounded by all these beliefs, we have to come to the center of faith. Not disrespecting all of them, what they're doing, but coming back, because there is a whole lot of time going in beliefs now. Faith is to know. I have to know God. Because at this point of time, we've heard about Him. There's so much controversy about it. About what God might have said and how people understand and how He's a punishing God. There's a lot of things about God which is very scary for some people. So, as I said, there is belief in God, but no faith. I'll just tell you, when I came to Brahma Kumaris, somebody shared this story with me. It seems he read it somewhere. And his brother shared it with me, and I want to share it with you. I think some of you must have heard it also, I don't know. Talks about this man climbing up a mountain. And he's trying to reach the top. And it just so happens that he gets very tired and he tells his group, you know, the group gets tired and they tell him that I need to stay back now because you need to go. You know, I'll go, but you all stay back. They'll say we'll stay back and you can climb the mountain because he wants to reach in the early morning hours and the whole team sleeps there. So when he reaches at the top, he's so happy that he jumps. And when he jumps, he starts rolling down, you know, he fell down and he's rolling down. And as he's falling down, he calls out to God. He says, God, please help me. I'm falling, please help me. And so he stops in the midair. He doesn't really fall. And because he's, you know, that rope that they tie when they climb a mountain, it's there holding him. So he's so happy and he says, God, thank you, you've rescued me. But then I can't be here the whole night hanging. I will die in this cold. Please help me now, please help me. It seems he heard the voice of God. That's how the story goes. And God said, cut the rope. It was so pitch dark and cold. This man was tired and he said, God, please don't tell me that. Because if I cut the rope, I'll go fall and die. This is the only thing which is holding me now. So, please help me. So again God said, cut the rope. So this man said, is there anyone else up there other than God who can help me? Yeah? So in the morning hours, when all his friends were climbing up the mountain, and then they see this man hanging dead, 4 feet above the ground. That is why it is important to have faith. When you have faith, you cut it. You don't know God. Even if he were to come in front of you and say, hey, listen to me, sir, please, 1 minute. You know, you don't know about the practical world here. You know? Yeah? So I have to know Him. And if I have to know God, I have to understand Him universally. Not through one religion, one caste, one region, one civilization, but no. universally. Because anything which is universally accepted is the truth. This is a mic. Whatever you call it, in whatever language, you go to Germany, you go to Poland, you go to Australia, you go and tell them, this mic, they will get you this. You know, if you specifically mention in their language what it is, and what is it used for? To speak, and let your voice go across distance. Right? But if you would like to use it like, you know, something like you just keep it here, without doing anything with it, it's up to you how you use it. But specifically it is used for this universally. And this is a concept. You have different kinds of mics. You have a stand, you have a cordless, you have something, you pin it up. You have so many mics. But the concept is one, and the understanding of it is just one. So however we represent God in whatever different ways that we look around and see God, but the concept is one. Or who God is and what He is. We understand that He is a parent of all the souls on this earth. There are five aspects which connect everybody on this earth about God. The five common aspects, because if you want to understand something universally, you have to say, take something which is common. What the whole universe will accept. Every religion would accept these 5 points. And these 5 points are, you can go to anybody and say, look, God is this, 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 this. If you tell these 5 points, they'll say, yes, we agree. The 5 points are, first, He's highest on high. They say there is no one higher than Him. If someone were to be higher than Him, we'll be calling out to Him. He is the mother and father for this whole earth, all the souls on this earth. But He Himself does not have a mother or father. He doesn't have any other relations actually. He only has children. Yeah? He is said to be beyond in the sense that He is beyond life, death, sorrow, happiness, like, dislike. He is beyond all that. That is what is said, abhokta, akarta, asochta. He doesn't experience anything like a human being. He doesn't think like a human being. He does not perform actions like a human being. He is beyond all that. He is not a human being. There is a second point that describes God to be beyond. He's not like you and me. Third, He's someone who is like an ocean. He's not an ocean. He's like an ocean. Why would we say it's like an ocean? Because when you stand and look at the ocean, you understand it's unlimited. Right? You can get lorries and lorries and fill it with all the water in the ocean is still there. It never gets dried up, it's there, it's always there. So God is unlimited, like an ocean, and the sense, how much ever you want to take from Him, He keeps on giving. So He's an ocean of love, ocean of peace, ocean of purity, ocean of power. There's a very old song in Hindi in some movie, प्यार का सागर है एक बूंद के प्यासे हम. You are an ocean of love and I'm thirsty for a drop. So with that one drop, which is very very pure, can actually quench our thirst. That's what it means. So He is someone who's like an ocean, unlimited. So you can see people from every religion can go and talk to Him with such right that they tell God, give me this, give me this. Everybody says. Not just few people in the world. Everybody. That means He must be having so much now. And you can continuously give. The fourth point is that God is someone who is knowledgeful. There is a sect under Islam which is called Sufism. They usually have praise of God. The Sufi singers, they sing beautifully the praise of God. So, in one of the songs, they've written, that if you turn the whole ocean on this earth into ink, all the trees on this earth into pens, all the land on this earth into paper, you will still not be able to write all the knowledge that God has within Him. You can't write all that. There is so much knowledge He has. So He said to be knowledgeful. There is nothing that He doesn't know. They say he's Trikal Darshi. That means He knows what has happened, what is happening, and what is going to happen. He can see the three aspects of time, the past, present and future, at the same time. Somebody had come up to me and they told me, "Do you know how to make God smile?" I said, "You tell me." So that person tells me, "Tell him about your future plans." And he'll smile because he knows what's going to happen. Yeah? So, past, present and future at the same time. The fifth point is, God is someone where everyone agrees, all the religions agree that He is God. Is the picture up here? When we say all religions agree that He is God, only then He is God. Now that's very tricky, isn't it? Because everywhere you see that if I were to tell that Krishna is God and I place it in front of a Christian, he'll put Christ and put it in front of me. And that is when the whole conflict begins. We have to come to, as I said, universally accepted. That means to say, I have to come to the point where we understand that all religions agree that He is God. Because all the souls of all religions are His children. So everyone has to agree that He is God. So let us go to the origins of every religion. What has happened now is a whole lot of expansion out of religion and what people are speaking and everybody's thoughts are in it now. But let us go to the origin, the very beginning of every religion and what has been spoken. If you come to Sikh religion, Guru Nanak had said, "Eko Omkar Satnam Akal." Eko Omkar, meaning there is only one God. There cannot be about 20 gods or 30 gods. Right? There is only one God and He cannot die. Akal. Kal means death. Akal, the one who does not have death. So Akal Takht Murat, He is the one who occupies the throne of immortality. He does not die. Like us, He doesn't. That means to say, He is saying that He does not have a body. Body means death, no? So He is referring to the point that He does not have a body. When you come to Christianity, Christ had said, God is love and God is light. It's a basic point that He had spoken. God is light and God is love. He never referred to Himself as God. He said that I'm a messenger of God, the child of God. When He was put on the cross, He looked at these people who were punishing Him and He looked above and He tells God that, God, please forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing. So He's referring to someone above Him. He's talking to God. So He understands that God is light and God is love. That is Christianity. When you come to Islam, if you go to any of the mosques, you do not have any image or idol or anything. Only the wordings of Holy Quran is taken and, you know, maybe framed and kept in the house. But even the photo of Prophet Muhammad is also not kept, because by that time what had happened to Christianity, Prophet Muhammad had seen it and he said, "You cannot have my painting done because you get caught up in me." So he doesn't have a picture. We don't even know how he looks like. And you're not supposed to also, you know, show a picture of how he looks. So it seems he went on top of a mountain and he had a vision of God. He wanted to get that image, you know, communicated to a common man. So it seems he told that you should get a stone where the light could pass through it. So someone got some stone and he kept it there and he calls it Sangheshwar. If you go to Makkah, there is oval-shaped stone there, which everybody goes there. It's a holy pilgrimage that everybody goes and turns around. You must be seeing in the television sometime. You see everybody going around. So that is the image of God, where he understands that God does not have a body. Sang e Ashwad, meaning a piece of light. Again, he's referring to God being incorporeal. He doesn't have a body. If you come to Hinduism, you will say, sister, we have so many images. Lot of temples of images. But if you go to the origin of the religion, the very first temple which was built was in Somnath. That is in Gujarat. And in that temple, if you see, there is only one image there of Shivlingam. It's kept like that. And everywhere, the oldest temples are all of Shivling. There is no eyes, nose, ears, nothing. It's just Shivling. Shiv means benefactor. In very old Hindi, it also means full stop. If people write accounts, right in the end of the accounts, they will just put a full stop or they will write Shiv. Shiv actually means full stop. How does a full stop look? Point. So, Shivling, ling means akar, swarup, form, shape. So, Shivling means the one who has the form of a dot. So that is why on a lingam, they apply a dot and worship. You've noticed a red dot is kept. So, it's actually the understanding that God is actually a point of light. The worship is of that dot, not the black background. So God is said to be a point of light. That is why all the old Shiva temples are called Jyotirlingas. Jyotirling Yatra, they say, no? They go to the specific temples. Jyoti means light. Linga means Rupa, the one who has the form of light. There is a temple in a Shiva temple in somewhere in Tamil Nadu. It's called Chidambaram. So when I was in school and I had gone there, and so there is a room which was locked. And my father asked them, you're going to open this? So they said, no, this is called Chidambar Rahasyam. It's a secret, they said. This is a special secret is there. So what secret? No, it opens on one particular day. And I was very curious. So my father was working there at that point. So I had called up and I told him at that point that please go, today is the day then they're opening the door. You go and see what is inside. My father is not a particularly religious person. So he sent his students there. So they called me and told me that there is pitch dark room. Pitch dark, there's nothing there. Corner somewhere, a light is flickering. They say this is the truth, that is how God is, and they shut the door. That is the truth. God is just a point of light. When I heard this, and then I started thinking, is this really true that every religion will agree that God is a point of light? Because that's what the whole course told me. So I went on my own little research when I heard this back in 92. I had a friend who is a Muslim. And so she was very staunch Muslim. She, not only during Ramadan days, even if it was not that, she would still do namaz 5 times a day, every day. And she had taken permission from the principal, and she was a very close friend of mine. And I would help her put the mat, and you know, I would help her and everything. So she had a small Quran in her bag always. She'll read it. She was like that. And we were in the 11th and the 12th class. So that she was the best person I could ask that whether God is a point of light. So I went and asked her, see, I go to Brahma Kumaris and they're telling me that God is a point of light. What do you have to say about that? She said, no, it's already written in Quran. So what is written? She said, Khuda Noor-e Ilahi. Noor means light. It's already there. God is Noor. My grandmother was a lot into Gita at that point. She's no more now, but at that point, she was very much deep into Gita. So she would read it all the time. So I asked her. And she told me that it is in Gita ज्योति बिंदु परमात्मा. ज्योति मीन्स बिंदु डॉट परम आत्मा इज रिटन इन गीता. I was from a convent school, which I told you. So we would go on and off in those days. I don't go now, but in those days with my friends back to school and meet Father Patrick. He was there, and we would go because he was such a very loving person all through our growing years. We'd always go back and talk to him and come back. He was a sports teacher actually, but then, you know, he was also a father kind of a thing. So he would always have something nice to talk. So when we would go and tell him that this is what, you know, I heard in Brahma Kumaris, what do you have to say? He said, and I taken a picture of God as a point of light, which you would see in the campus so many places. I took a picture and I showed him. He saw it and he said, this is Yehovah. I said, who is Yehovah? He said, God. But then he said, you to reach him, you have to go through the teachings of Christ. But I said, but this is Yehovah, this is Yehovah. I said, good. That's about it. And so we had a servant maid in the house who was a Christian. And she would be sweeping, and one day she sees a picture that we kept in the drawing room, a huge picture of God as a point of light. She saw that and she looks at me and she says, you believe in Yehovah and you don't go to church? I said, well, this is Yehovah? I said, yeah, this is Yehovah, this is God. I said, this is it. So I can go anywhere in this whole world and tell God is a point of light, and they say yes. I agree, because every child can recognize the father. Now the question arises that what about all the deities that we have and all the images that we've been worshipping for years and all different people that we believe would take us through? You know, there are four levels. This should give you all the clarity. There are four levels. One level are, in our own homes, there are people who are very nice, very generous-hearted and, you know, having some great virtues. I heard someone who was telling me, sister, my father was a doctor. He didn't leave this much for me, nothing, not even a pie he's left for me. But his name, with his name I'm earning now. Wherever I go, he's a marketing person. Wherever he goes, and he talks about that my father is so and so. They say, oh my God, we know him so well. You know, we'll take your product, a kind of a thing, you know. So his name is earning me, but he has not left me any money. So there are some people like that in our own families, maybe an uncle or a father or a grandfather, who's actually lived by those virtues and values, and we actually want to inculcate those in our lives. So, this is one level. In every home there is someone good. A level above that are Mahatmas and Punyatmas and Dharmatmas. Like Vivekananda, Mahatma Gandhi or Ramakrishna Paramhamsa. You know, there's so many like that. So many. Not even just in India, but also abroad. Everywhere you have someone there who's done something for the society and transformed societies. So seeing all this, Mahatmas and Dharmatmas, they were also seeking above. They said, you know, Ramakrishna Paramhamsa used to worship Durga. Right? And Vivekananda used to worship Ramakrishna Paramhamsa. Right? So if you see, there are all of them seeking above them. But they were all said to be Mahatmas, Punyatmas and Dharmatmas. A level above them are Devi Atmas, whom we refer to as Devi Devatai or deities, whom we worship in the temples. Right? So they are Devi Atmas, and in the scriptures is written there are 33 crore Devi Devatai. There are so many who still live in that kingdom. And there are plenty of them, plenty of them. They've got the divine virtues and they were perfect. Above these 33,000 Devi Devata, and the higher level they are, above them is Paramatma. Above Devi Atmas is Paramatma, he's only one. You cannot be like him. I mean, you cannot be him. They cannot be gods. There's only God. Deities, plenty. If you hear people doing, if you follow Hinduism, but when you do the puja, they will say Vishnu Devataya Namaha, Brahma Devataya Namaha, Shiva Paramatmaya Namaha. They differentiate immediately. Param Atma and Devta, they're different. When you just look at the deities, they are our ancestors. In South, I don't know about the North, in the South we have Shraddh ke din hote, you know, like you have those days where you keep all the pictures of your grandfather or grandmother who are no more, and you keep, and then, you know, you do worship and you do some puja. So on that particular time, you will also see that you will keep the picture of your grandfather or grandmother along with the deities. You will do whatever you do for the deities, you will do for your grandfather, grandmother. You put tilak, you put flower, you put everything. So that means to say, worshipping a deity is worshipping your ancestor. You will never keep your grandfather's picture next to Shivling and worship. Never. Never. It's because Shiva is the father of all the deities. He is the father of all the Mahatmas and Punyatmas. He is the father of all the good souls. The difference between God and all of us is that we have bodies, He does not. And He is very high in His virtues and power behind. And the third thing that differentiates us with Him is where He lives. Did Deepaban take up about the three worlds yesterday? No. Do you have the three worlds with you? Can you show me? Yeah. So if you come to this point of understanding where is God, if He is a point of light, He must be somewhere. We've always understood, most of us, that God is just next to us. He's in this wall, He's here, He's everywhere. But if He were to be everywhere and He is within me also, how come people can do such wrong things and He can still watch and do nothing if He is so powerful? What is the use of His existence actually? He doesn't really exist physically within us, but there has been a concept where people have said, if you do something wrong, He is watching you. So they have automatically felt that He must be in the wall. He need not be anywhere here. When we say God, we look about, don't we? Do we ever say God? No, we don't do that. We always look about, say, God, upar wale jane, and it's like, He's there up there, He knows it. We have this children's camp back in our center, and this we always tell the children to write a letter to God before they go to sleep. That's one of the homeworks we give. So one boy refused to write. He's about 6 or 7, I don't know how old he was. He refused to write a letter to God. So when he was brought to us, the mother said, "Sister, I'm very worried about him. He's not writing a letter to God." I said, "Why not? Why don't you want to write? He says, "No, I don't want to write." I said, "You can't force him. He has a mind of his own. He doesn't want to write, he won't write." But the mother was insistent, "No, why should he not write? Ask him." So he says, "God knows everything. Why to write?" I said, that's a lovely question. But you know, the thing is, when you go and you say hello, when you go say good morning to your teacher, the teacher already knows it's a good morning. Why do you have to go and say good morning? And why do you have to tell your mother you're going when you're going to school? Because she knows you're going anyway. Why? It's a thing of respect. So you can tell God whatever, even though He knows what is wrong in telling Him, no? That you are telling yourself. So he said, he thought for a while and he said, "Okay, I will tell. I will write." Oh, I said, "Thank you. Please write." But he said, "I will write only things that I do in my house and not what I do outside there." I said, "What is the difference?" So he says, the thing is, there is no roof. Here there is roof, no? So he cannot see. I said, no roof can stop him from seeing where you are. So he said, "I don't know." "How then?" I said, "Okay, close your eyes." So he closed his eyes and I said, "Have you seen a rose?" He said, "Yes." "Which color rose do you like?" He said, "Yellow." Does it smell good? He said, yes. Does it smell lot good? He said, very good. I said, now open your eyes and tell me where is the rose. He said, it is not here. I said, it's not here. But you said it smells good, it's yellow. You told all that. Where is that rose you're talking about? He said, inside me. It's there, you know. I know the rose. Something like that, he said. So I said, that's how God sees you. He knows you. He knows you more than you can ever know yourself. He doesn't have to see you because he doesn't see bodies, no? You go to temple, you break a coconut, no? What does it mean? Did Deepa Ben tell you yesterday? Coconut actually refers to the shell. And we're telling God, I know you don't see this shell. So we're breaking it. The body, breaking it. And the coconut, the white coconut is I, the soul. And this is who you're seeing. And from there comes my bhavana, that is coconut water. And I sprinkle on you. That's what it means. You can break 1,000 coconuts and not know the meaning, then you can as well make chutney and eat. It doesn't matter. The meaning is this, that I'm breaking the shell of this body and I'm offering myself to you. So because he doesn't see shells, he doesn't see the bodies. So, the understanding is that he sees souls. And so, where he is and the distance between us and him doesn't matter at all, because he's beyond sound, beyond space, beyond time. He's beyond matter. So nothing actually is too far for him. So he is, if you can understand where he is beyond the universe, beyond all the limitations of this earth, in a land called Param Dham. Christians call it seventh heaven. You have the picture on? Thank you. You see the topmost world. I can't see it. I hope, you know, it's their topmost world, which is in red in color. Is it golden red in color? You can see that? Brothers, this side? Sisters, you can see it? Yeah. So, the topmost land that you can see is the land which is called Param Dham, Mukti Dham. That is how sannyasis call it, Mukti Dham. It is called Nirvana. Nirvana. That is what Buddhists call it. Nirvani. There are no words there because only souls reside there. There are no bodies. So, there is no words, there is no movement. Right? It is called seventh heaven by Christians. Muslims call it some Maidan. I don't remember it. But that particular land is where God resides. That is where he's always there. And that is the land of all souls. In most auspicious occasions, they use red and yellow for puja or wedding or anything like that. Kumkum and haldi. They use both, which refers to the land that we come from, which is gold and red. That is where those two, blue and orange, blue and green are also good colors, no? But they use these two colors only. We're said to be auspicious, so that is the land that God resides. And the land below that is what we call as a subtle region. This is a region with sublime, like, you know, you have, in Christianity, they call it the angel world. There's a world where there's just a body of light and there's just movement. There's only communication through thoughts. But this is where our own perfection is. And I think in sometimes in very mythological story movies and all, they show people sprinkling or flowers from the clouds. Have you seen that? They sprinkle clouds. Which is referring to the subtle region actually. Cloudy place that they show. That is the subtle region. It's totally white and that is where the ones who live are without this body made of muscle and bone. In our own perfect image is there, which is referred to as angelic. Below that subtle region is what you see is the world that we live in. This is called the corporeal world. Sakar Dunya. and which is within the limitations of time, space, matter and sound, when we are becoming and they are changing, ever-changing world that we live in here down below. We are here in this world and God is up there in Paramdham. And the method of connecting myself to Him is called Raj Yoga Meditation. The tasks that God performs are three. He establishes new sanskaras within the soul. He destroys the old, whatever is there within the soul. He sustains which is there, the newness that He has created within us. These are the three tasks of God. That is what referred to as Trimurti, Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwar. It also means G-O-D, God, generator, operator, destroyer. Same meaning. And so, that is why you see these three lines most of the time on Lingam, which we understand that He is the one who can perform this task on every soul on this earth, but depending upon your availability. Now look, if you have a radio, if you have a radio, and this radio is not working, what do you do? What would you do if your radio is not working? Not use it at all. Repair it. Then you take it to a repair store and repair it, right? Would you call up All India Radio and complain that they're not transmitting programs? Would you say that? No. So, the radio here needs repair. God is transmitting His energy continuously. He is. But the repair is here, so it's not able to catch the frequency. Our frequency is totally wrong. God's frequency is totally different. It's not at all in tune with Him. He's trying to get in touch and we're too busy. He's beyond matter and I'm all the time thinking I'm matter. I think I'm body and I'm moving around. He's in the land of total silence there and we are in total sound. So many thoughts. Thoughts are also sound, no? Too many thoughts. He is the one who lives beyond any sound, beyond matter, and because we are in this limitation, we have to come about that. And the first step is, I am a peaceful soul. I'm not a peaceful person. But I am a peaceful soul. Have you tried it yesterday? Did you? I'll give you a lot of homeworks today, which you're going to get exercises. You'll be able to do it today as you're moving around and interacting. You will be able to feel that this is very important for you so that you can go back home and keep doing it. You continuously do it. So, it's very important that you understand that you're a peaceful soul. So you're opening up yourself for Him to come and touch you. God has no problem absolutely in getting in touch with you. But we have issues in not being able to experience Him. It's like they say, early morning hours. That's why we understand, when do we have to meditate? A lot of people ask me, early morning hours. Like how you see this, 4 o'clock in the morning, we're all walking up and meditating. Like they say, if you want to, initially, not now, but before they would say, if you want to call abroad, you should do it in the night. And then, you know, you won't have much of traffic in the phone and so you can get in touch. So in the same way, if you want to get in touch with God, it's when all the vibrations of the world, especially the world around you, is calmed down. There are no vibrations at all. They're all sleeping. And that is when, because there's a lot of obstruction, a lot of vibrations when you're trying to connect. So early morning hours is the best time to connect. It has a very simple technique of understanding that you are a soul. First, it's very important because yesterday's lesson is very important. I am a soul. I don't have a soul. Do you have a soul? You are a soul. You have a body. And this body is an instrument through which you are communicating to the world. You can exist without this body. You're still living without this body. That's why near the dead body they keep that deep, no? The soul is still alive. It's still there. And people come to me and they people go through a lot of trauma when they lose a child or a spouse or a parent. I always tell them the soul is there. They don't trouble the soul by crying. Instead of thinking that it's gone, you should say it's still there. A different part, different place. The soul is there. So the soul listening, the more you cry, you're pulling the soul. The soul feels bad, no? So that is why it's important that we recognize this knowledge and understand this knowledge about the soul. Even if it's a small child in your house, it's a soul. Must be a very experienced soul, more experienced than you. You don't even know. Maybe having very high virtues than you, so we cannot disrespect. Maybe a small child or an adult or a teenager. Soul has to be respected. So the more you become soul conscious, the more the respect and the equality comes. And the more the acceptance and the ability to forgive comes. You go beyond these differences and like and dislike about, I like this person, I don't like this person, I don't. You go beyond that to a large degree when you are soul conscious. It is simple today. The whole day when you are walking around in the campus, at least see 5 people around you. Anybody. Look at them and then you think they are actually souls. Don't stare at them. Okay? Just look at them and you think they are actually souls, aren't they? I can't see. But then the driver is inside. You can't see the driver and the car is moving. You just can't. So you know the soul is inside and the soul is whom I would communicate and talk to. Right? It is not the body that I talk to. When you're talking on the telephone, you're not talking to the telephone. You are actually talking through the telephone, through that person's telephone to that person, no? So when I'm talking to you, I'm talking to this telephone, through your telephone, to you, the soul. So the soul is talking to you, the soul. Because the soul is listening. Body is not listening. If body had to listen, then the body should listen when you're sleeping also. The body doesn't listen. That is why the whole body is being burnt, nobody calls out after death. Stop, stop, don't burn me. The one who's experience is gone. That's why the first step to connect to God is soul consciousness. I am a peaceful soul. I am that. A point of light behind my forehead. I am that peaceful soul. And then I am the child of God. I am His child. Because what has happened now is there's a whole lot of time spent in mediators. You know what mediators? Someone would say, I'll take you to God. They might be really intending you to take you to God. But you know, if God is your father, if the Prime Minister is your father, do you have to take an appointment? Do you have to go through a secretary? Do you have to? You go directly barge into the whole room and say, hello, how are you, Papa, and talk. Isn't it? So if God is your father, you don't need secretaries. You don't need to go through anything. Because what happens is, the problem is, with all our due respect to all the secretaries, we get caught up with the secretary. We say, secretary, you are God. Forget about God now. It takes too much time to meet Him. You are okay with us. So the secretary, some secretaries will say, don't. I am not God. But some will say, okay, I am only God. Now worship me. There are a lot of so-called secretaries around the world. It's very confusing. I had a group who had taken the course, and the person who got all his friends and relatives for the course, he told my sister, one of my very close friends, he's refusing to come. I said, don't force. These are things you cannot force. He said, no, the thing is, he has to come. He's such a nice person. I said, why, what happened? So I don't know, he's refusing to tell me. So I told him, you tell him, come for one class, you like it, you continue, or else don't come after that. One class, ask him to come. So he came And he was coming every day. And so one day I asked him, brother, why you didn't want to come? He said, the thing is, how his brother and his bhabhi and his niece and nephew, all four of them, used to go to some person. And he used to give them lot of directions and what to do. So one day, all four of them committed suicide. Because that particular person told them that that day if you die, you will go to swarga. So whom are you guided by? It's very important. Human beings guidance, some are good, some not so good, some influence. Some people are doing really good, others will influence them. We don't know. So that's exactly why it's very important that at this point of time, I go directly to God. I go directly take power from Him. It's very, very important now. Because nobody seemed to have reached anywhere getting caught up with the secretaries. With all that secretaries who are trying to take also, people are still caught up with secretaries only. You know what I mean when I talk about secretaries. And there are so many now. Too many. I remember Dadi Janki. She had come to Hyderabad. And somebody came and touched her feet in our center. So Dadi was in the breakfast and she called me and she said, "Tum achhi teacher nahi ho." Maine kaha, "Kyun Dadi? Aap aise kyun keh rahe ho? Why are you saying that I'm not a good teacher?" She said, "You have not taught your students well. Why are they touching my feet?" I said, "They have not taken the course, and you ask them to take the course, that God doesn't have feet at all. So why to touch a human's feet, no? Huh? You're a child. Why would a child, you know, say I have nothing? When God is an ocean, how can you be nothing? How can you be nothing? How can you go and touch somebody's feet? Why should you? It's not disrespect. Yeah, respect se jo karte hai ghar mein, that is different. But the thing is, by telling ourselves we are nothing, we are going very far from God. Very far from God actually. It's very important to come to that consciousness that I am a soul and I have that respect for who I am and I have a right over God. I have a right over Him. I don't have to beg Him. I have a right. He's my father. Usually if you go anywhere, rightfully they ask, "God, give me this. Why you made me like this?" So this is a rightful relationship this is. So this is not something we are saying, "I am nothing, you are everything, and look, I am finished." No. So this particular lesson is giving you the understanding that God is your Father. And He is an ocean, so you can have everything that He has. He is khula bandara, this is open, you take whatever you want. But you need to have the right method. If you write some name, let us say you are searching for somebody, and let us say the name is Ravi Kumar. If you see the telephone directory, lot of Ravi Kumars are in this area. Okay, then you see the surname, same surname, hundreds will be there. Then you see the address. When you see the address, then you know, this is the Ravi Kumar I am looking for. So, there are lot of gods in the whole world. But if I would say, God is living in Mumbai, would you like it? No, God is actually in Cochin. God is in Paramdham, right? He is in Paramdham. Then He is God, no? So where do I have to connect my intellect? There. Not anywhere here, He is nowhere here. Human beings live here. Great human beings also. Wonderful human beings also. But none of them are gods. Nobody is God. Nobody can make you powerful. They can give you a lot of knowledge. They can give you support and guidance. But they cannot make you powerful. That's the problem. So you have to go directly to God. So that is where He is. And that is where you need to take your intellect to and connect to Him. Right? Soul consciousness, God consciousness, connection. Simple technique. You can do it walking, moving, talking. Tomorrow you'll be taught the proper technique of how to connect. Right? But I'll first give you all the homeworks and I'll go through the commentary that I will give you after that. The homework, if you have your diary pen, please write it down. 10 times in the day, I am a peaceful soul. In the whole day, time and time again, I am a peaceful soul. Stay in that experience. I am a peaceful soul. And see yourself as that point of light. See yourself that I am that beautiful point of light. Don't concentrate here. Understand that you're a soul behind your forehead and you're a soul. 10 times? Is it okay? Is it difficult or easy? Easy. Fine. Good. And I told you already the second homework, seeing at least 5 to 6 people around in the campus and see them and understand that they're actually souls. Just points of lights with their own beautiful qualities. Maybe all the sanskaras they've developed later on, but originally very beautiful souls who've come from Paramdham. We all came from the same home. You may be from London, you may be from somewhere, you may be a Christian, you may be Muslim. We all have come from there. And all are God's children, right? This is second one. This is easy. Fine? Okay. Third exercise. Anytime during the whole day, and especially in the night before you go to bed, bring all your family members in front of you. Bring them all, one after another in front of you. And give dil se dua, you know, give good wishes. See them all as souls. See them like a galaxy of souls in front of you. And give them lot of good wishes, lot of good wishes. That they can experience their originality, that they come closer to God, that they can get the power and the direction at the right time. Whatever you want to give, please give them today. Without fail. Any time in the day, just 5 minutes it takes, not much of time. And this is the biggest charity that you can do. Biggest punya. Charity begins at home. Right? So, your family members first. Then of course you include your relatives, you include your friends, you include... That is a whole big list, whomever you want to include, but you have to start from here. Okay? These three exercises. The fourth one from today, I will add. Talk to God. Talk to Him. You have a lot of meditation rooms around here. Tell your whole life story to Him. Your life story won't take too long. Don't think, when you're thinking and telling God, don't think it'll take hours together. No, He knows. So, you're just remembering those points and say, this is it, this is it, this is it. These are my concerns, these are my concerns, these are... I'm not complaining, but I'm putting in front of you. You're going to take over now. You're going to tell Him that. You're going to take over now. I'm going to put everything in front of you now. These are my concerns. These are the skeletons in my cupboard. Whatever it is, put it just there. And He's not a punishing God, let me tell you. He's a loving God. So when people come up and tell me, I'm God-fearing, I feel bad. Why would you fear Him? You have to fear people here. You don't fear God. He's not punishing at all. He knows everything and He doesn't mind. He is an ocean of mercy, you know. So why would He say, oh, you did something wrong, so you're terrible? No, it's not like that. You should say, I'm God-loving. Makes a difference. I'm God loving. Put everything in front of Him today. Talk to Him. Tell Him everything. He'll make His plan. He won't tell us His plan. That's another thing. Okay, so let Him make His plan. But you put it across from your heart and just put it there. Okay? Fine? So you'll do these 4 exercises today without fail. And tomorrow, when the class is being taken, you will be asked whether you did it or not. And I'm sure you'll all say yes. Okay? Yeah. So, you can all sit back and relax yourself. And I'll keep giving you thoughts and you let your mind go with the thoughts that I give you. If your mind wanders, don't worry. Don't try too hard to concentrate. You'll end up with a headache if you try too hard. Just let it flow. If you prefer to keep your eyes open, which is good, you can focus on some point behind me in these few moments of silence. I sit here, not thinking about anything else but myself. And recognizing the importance of this time, this moment. And within these moments of silence, I'm actually empowering myself, becoming more powerful, more peaceful, going beyond whatever I have known about myself, but how I look and what I do. I go into the depths of my being, behind my eyes. I am just a point of light. I sparkle gently, hidden within the layers of the skin. I reside. Behind my eyes, controlling this body, using this body to connect to this world. I am a soul. I am eternal. I am peace. I am love. And I am power. And I am a very divine being with innate divine qualities. I gently understand that nothing in this world can limit me, because they are treasures of qualities and powers hidden within me. I'm a living diamond. Very valuable. And slowly and gently I prepare myself to take a journey beyond, to go to my original home and meet my parent, God Himself. I see myself as a soul, sparkling and leaving this body behind, and fly towards the roof and beyond. And as I fly, I look down below and I can see everyone seated below. I can see my own body there, my costume. I fly beyond the roof into the open skies. Nothing holds me back and I feel light. I feel free. No questions, no apprehension. Just that freedom of who I truly am. I look down below. I can see the whole campus and people walking around. It looks so tiny now down below. I fly through the clouds. I pass by the sun, the moon, the stars. I fly beyond. I go past the whole universe. I fly till I reach the land of silence, Paramdham. It's a golden red land, the home of all souls, the land of peace. I enter this land and I feel that I have been here before. This is my original home. I swim in the peace of that land. And I see in front of me God Himself. He looks just like me as a point of light, but His rays of peace and love, power, reach out to me, encircle me, and I drown myself in the experience of His love. I feel fulfilled. I feel belonged. I feel everything will be taken care of. For He, my parent, is with me. There is nothing to worry. Every burden you remove, every question, you place it in front of Him. You tell Him what He means to you. Tell Him to guide you. Walk by you. He continuously sees the beauty inside you and fills you. And you tell Him, God, you're not only my father and mother, but you're also my friend and a guru. Guide me through. Take me through. And I take strength from you. I stay in this moment. I stay in this second. Just empowering myself. Now slowly I prepare myself to take the journey back. I leave the original home behind and I fly back through the universe. Through the sun, the moon, the stars, and through the clouds, I, the sparkling soul, I reach this earth, into this hall and back, behind my forehead. I'm an empowered soul, touched by God, and eternally His child, protected and guided by Him. I'm safe. And everything will be all right now. Stay in this awareness. that you are a soul chosen by God. Om Shanti. Om Shanti. Om Shanti. Om Shanti. What a wonderful morning, isn't it? Sitting in his own house and becoming aware of our Supreme Father. I'll start my day with one little correction. Thankful to Radhika sister for that. I used to believe in I am God-fearing person, but today I'll correct it. I am a God-loving person. So, have a very nice day and Om Shanti.